check 1, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Ha! Cha!
Arizona Sports, 98.7 FM.
Oh, Luke, Wolf, hey, my brothers, are you kidding me? This does not suck buttermilk, right?
Ron Wolfley.
Hey, I was a wedge blister. How are you?
Luke Lipinski.
Hey, guys, welcome back to the show.
It's Wolf and Luke.
What is up, live from the Auction Community Studios on this Monday morning. It is the Wolf and Luke Show. Wolf, how's it going over there?
It's going, man. How you doing, Luke?
It's good. I'm learning to not put my happiness in the hands of Valley Sports. That's what I've learned over the last week and a half.
Yeah, you know, you're probably talking about Saturday, right?
Talking about all the Coyote stuff last week, all the ASU stuff last week, Merrill Kelly getting hurt, or the Suns no-showing the second half of a playoff game.
Okay, yeah. Now, where do you begin on that one right there? Let's just dive right into this, shall we? Game one of the Suns T-Wolves series. Where do you start?
You know, to be consistent from where I was last week going into the game, I'll start with, I think we all knew Anthony Edwards was going to go off at some point. I was hoping it wouldn't be in game one. I was hoping the Suns could delay that as long as they could. You know what I mean? Because for whatever reason, you had held him to base, it was 14 points a game in the first three meetings.
Yes.
He knew he was going to go off. He's too good. But I was hoping you could hold that to like game two or game three and maybe, you know, pick up a couple wins here early, and now that's, at least in game one, that's out the window. Yeah, and no, I think he's up now.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, right now, that's probably a good place to start for a lot of people that are out there. But for me right now, it was the physicality of the game. That is where I've got to start right now. The referees let both teams know right from the tip that this was going to be a physical series, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've been watching the postseason period right now. Have you noticed, though? It's pretty consistent in regard to being more physical. We all know the postseason, of course, gets more physical. We all know that. But it seems like there's a consistency that is here with how these games are being officiated that I think we're going to see a very, very physical postseason, not just with the Suns and the T-Wolves, but across the NBA.
As long as they're consistent with it, I can get on board with that. But I don't know that that's great for the Suns against this particular opponent. I mean, we talked so much last week about how of the three teams you might realistically play, with Denver and Oklahoma City being the other two, Minnesota was probably the best matchup, and I still feel that way. But if they're going to be allowed to be physical, that's how they want to play. And so the Suns are going to, you know, it's one thing to have to adjust mid-series to an adjustment the other team makes. I don't know how the Suns are going to completely overhaul how they play if Minnesota is going to be that physical.
Yeah, no, I know. You know, just watching it, it was really difficult because the Suns came out. They came out and they were ready to go. They matched that physicality in that first quarter. They did. They played really, really well. I thought they played really, really hard. I thought their intensity level was there. And then all of a sudden, after that first quarter, they actually had a lead, 28-27, I believe, if memory serves. They had the lead. And from that point, for the rest of the game, the next three quarters, it seemed like they faded in terms of physicality.
Yeah.
They faded from that point on. And, you know, it wasn't something dramatic. It just was an act of attrition over the next three quarters.
I told you this in the pre-show meeting. The way it felt and the way it has felt this season is like you take your phone, but your phone's a little bit older and you can tell you're going to need a new phone at some point.
Yeah.
You charge it, it's 100%. But then it just rapidly drops off as the day goes on. And that's
a great analogy.
It's what the Suns felt like on Saturday, and they felt like that at different times this season. It's like, okay, we're here. But as the game starts to wear, especially in the second and third quarters on Saturday, it was just they could not match Minnesota in that regard. It's one game out of seven.
It's one.
We've seen them fall behind. I'm trying to pull up all the numbers on this. We saw them fall behind in the first round against the Clippers last year and then win the next four games. But in general, in this era, since they started making it back to the playoffs, once they fall behind in a series, they haven't responded real well. So this is a big game, obviously, tomorrow.
Yeah. You know, once again, we were talking about this very thing. Who has more to lose going into this game? And I thought it was the Timberwolves had more to lose going into this game. Stop and think about it once again. If they lose this game to the Suns, now all of a sudden they've lost four consecutive games in a row. Every time they played the Suns, the last four times, they lost. And now all of a sudden, here you are in the postseason. You're making vows under moon, sun, and sky as to what you're going to do and how you're going to play. And you go out game one of the series and lose home court advantage immediately. They had a lot riding on this game, the T-Wolves.
Yeah.
What a bummer it would be for them collectively as a team if they would have lost game one. And that would have really damaged their confidence. I don't care what anybody says.
That was a reminder. Watching that game was a reminder of why the Suns could not be in the play-in tournament, because they could go out there and have a game like that and just be done. You know what I mean? At least now they have a best-of-seven series. They have time to adjust. Not a ton of time, but they have time to respond. Minnesota, though, to your point, really just kind of erased the entire regular season with that. I mean, would you rather be the team that was 3-0 in the regular season or the team that's 1-0 in the series? You'd much rather be Minnesota right now. And so, like, to your point, yeah, if the Suns go out and just continue what we saw in the regular season, then it's kind of like, okay, they just own this team going into game two. Now, if you're Minnesota, you're like, yeah, who cares what they did? And we're up 1-0 in the playoffs.
Yeah, and for me, Basinonians, it was the how. It was the physicality. That's what really stood out to me. It was the how the T-Wolves and their physicality unfolded over the course of that game. The T-Wolves out-rebounded the Suns 28-52. 52-28 is a better way of saying that. 52-28.
There's no good way of saying that.
Okay.
That's horrible.
The T-Wolves were plus 10 on the offensive glass. Plus 10. Plus 18 in the paint. They had a 20-6 edge in second chance points. I mean, that was it right there. That's the kind of physicality they brought to the floor. And that's what the Suns needed to do.
Here's Kevin Durant on the physicality.
Yeah, I do. And I think sometimes we might have fouled too much there at bad times, trying to be physical. But you know, we'll figure it out. The rest of letting us play, and you know, it's the type of game we want.
That's why I go back to what I was just saying before. Just be consistent. Now, you've kind of set a tone in this first game because the Suns, and I sort of understand where they're coming on some of these. They're trying to play physical, and the way that question was asked to Kevin Durant is, does he feel the Suns match the T-Wolves' physicality early, which is why he said, yeah, I do. But they also got into some foul issues doing it. If the Suns now are able to pull this off and kind of adjust for game two, and hey, they're going to call it this way and we're going to be more physical, and then the officials are completely different in game two with the way they call it,
yeah,
that's where you really have problems. So Even if a more physical series is an advantage for the Timberwolves, I just want it to be called consistently now going forward, because the Suns' season may hinge on that, because right now they're trying to adjust with the way it was officiated in game one.
Yeah, you know, to your point right there, Devin Booker actually said, quote, we all just need to adjust to the playoff physicality. They're being ultra physical with me, and I had three early fouls. Just trying to find a rhythm from there, end quote,
yeah,
said Book. To your point.
This is the downside of the NBA, and it's just basketball in general, I guess. But like in hockey, it's a different style of play in the playoffs, but everybody knows how it's going to be called. Baseball, yeah, they don't like suddenly shrink the strike zone in the playoffs. And everybody knows we're going to move it just slightly over to one side.
Yeah.
That's football. It's not like they suddenly just consciously decide to call games differently. The NBA officials can affect the series. I'm not saying that's why the Suns lost on Saturday, but I'm saying now going forward, it's got to be called that way because the Suns are trying to calibrate the way they play to how the officials are calling the game.
Yeah, and I think so much of the time right there, I don't think fans really want to see a lot of whistles being blown.
I don't.
I don't think. I know. I feel exactly the same way. And not only that, I think it's a situation where you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, do we want these guys to go out there and shoot free throws the entire game or not? And I also think they don't want guys like Devin Booker and Kevin Durant fouling out or being in foul trouble in the postseason because they've got a quick whistle. It makes a lot of sense to me. They want their ratings to go up, not down.
Yeah, but everything you just said, I agree with. But if Devin Booker or Kevin Durant's walking around with five fouls in the fourth quarter on Tuesday and there's some ticky-tack fouls in there, we're all going to be losing our minds. We come back. If the Arizona Cardinals are going to trade back, is it not going to happen until they're on the clock? We'll explain where that's coming from next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
We're interested in coming up to five. Hey, bud. we want to, we're back at 12 now. We want to come up to 7 possibly.
I think last year we proved that we were more than willing to move up, to move back, to stay put and pick.
If the draft fell 1-2-3 and Marvin Harrison Jr. was there, it would be a no-brainer for the Cardinals. I don't believe that now. I think they would be more open to moving back and getting more picks.
The Arizona Cardinals have traded the pick.
Wolf and Luke bring you Monty on the Move.
We are coming up on the first round of the NFL draft on Thursday night this week. Wolf, you're unveiling the first of 4 freaks in the Freak Show in about an hour.
Yeah. Looking forward to that, of course.
Yeah. I am too. I love the Freak Show. We're also going to talk to Kellen Olsen in the noon hour, and we're going to talk to Jody Jackson in about half hour. But right now, I'm going to read you a quote from Adam Schefter here, okay? And this is from just, it's kind of like just a notebook, basically. NFL draft notes. What Adam Schefter is hearing, okay?
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be about the Cardinals, but the first team he writes about is the Cardinals. And he talks about why they're in the catbird seat. And a lot of it is nothing, you know, that's going to be shocking to Cardinals fans. But it does say Monty Ossenfort has told teams around the league that have inquired about trading up that he wants to wait until he is in position to pick before agreeing to any trade. So if you're going to make a trade with the Cardinals on draft night, or if Monty's going to make a trade, expect it to be when the clock starts on that number 4 pick. Then don't necessarily expect one coming like tomorrow. Although he does note, Adam Schefter does, unless some team just wants to get crazy and outbid the market right now.
Yeah, outbid the market right now. Is that a possibility? I think that it is, but it just, to me, base earnings, it makes so much sense. If you're Monty Ossenfort and the Arizona Cardinals believing that the draft starts with you at number 4, and most people do believe that, the first position player.
Except Joe Ortiz,
could be
who believes it starts with the Chargers.
Yeah, right, exactly. Whatever, Joe. Okay, that's fine. Whatever. Don't get me sidetracked on that. No, I'm just saying right now, why wouldn't you maximize your leverage if you were Monty Ossenfort? How do you maximize that leverage? Knowing that I'm going to be fine. I just want you all to know, everyone who calls me and says, hey, are you interested in possibly moving down and giving us a number 4 pick? Everybody who calls, I just want you to know right now, we're really good with the player we're going to take at number 4. We don't have to do jack, and we're going to be great. Why wouldn't you wait until they're on the clock, literally, for another team's best offer? Why wouldn't you maximize your leverage?
Everybody outside the Chargers seems to get it, too. I'm reading more from Schefter. He says, and so Ossenfort is sitting in the eyes of one coach, quote, in the catbird seat, quote, unquote. The coach explained, quote, he sits at number 4 and can take all the calls he wants, unquote. It's a lot of quotes in there, I understand.
No.
But you get the point. Now, the last thing Schefter says here, and it's later in the story, I do think that this is important, even though, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But the last sentence he writes is, Arizona already has 6 picks in the top 90, so a significant trade down isn't as urgent unless it's a huge package. That is my stance going into this. I mean, my primary stance is you have to get one of those top 3 receivers, whoever you truly within your scouting department deem to be the best. I think you're messing up if you come out of this draft with a clear-cut number 1 receiver. But that last sentence right there, I think, is important. They still have 6 picks in the top 90. It's not like they're devoid of picks, and Monty's got to rebuild the everything through the draft. They've got 6 picks. So if you're going to make him a crazy offer, then yeah, he's going to take it. He said that last week. He said he would make his family move if somebody made a good offer on his house. That's Monty. But he doesn't have to make a trade.
He doesn't have to. Exactly, Luke. That's the great thing about it right now. You could sit there and, based on earnings, let me just say this right here. I would be absolutely shocked if Monty Ossenfort, the Arizona Cardinals, didn't have one of those 3 top receivers rated higher than the other 2. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would be shocked if they didn't have a favorite. I don't think they're looking at this like, well, it's tier 1, and we're just going to be good with a tier 1 receiver. I think they have a specific guy in mind at number 4. I think they got that guy in mind. I don't know if it's Marvin Harrison Jr. Is it Malik Nabers? Is it Roma Dunze? I don't know. Is it possible that it's not a wide receiver? I guess it's possible, but at the same time, I just don't see that. being the case right now, knowing the need the Cardinals have.
Well, in the way
one of those guys, I guarantee you, is rated higher than the other two.
The way they handled free agency, too, pretty clearly indicated, yeah, we need a receiver, and so our response is going to be we're going to let Hollywood walk. So now we really need a receiver. I'm going to trade Rondale Moore. So they really, really need a receiver. So I would be shocked if they don't come out of it with one of the top three. But it's interesting as you're talking. I mean, what if the guy that they have higher on their board is Rome Odunze?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say that. Well, yeah. Then they can, at the very least, trade down with the Giants and still get him. So it's, I don't know, if you want to put a percentage on it here on Monday morning, we may as well do this. Like, what are the percentage chances in your mind that they just stay there and take Marvin Harrison Jr.? To me, it's, I've been saying 25%. It might even be lower. It might be like 20%. The only way they're staying at number four is if they think Marvin Harrison Jr. is a clear step above those other two guys.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And I would say maybe that is the case right there. Maybe it is Marvin Harrison Jr.
Could be.
That they have. The one thing I just want to say is I think you have to know that you have to, if they've got all three guys on the same level and they're like, we don't care, we're just going to get one of those guys. Again, I would be shocked if that were the case, because conviction matters so much. You have to choose one of those guys that you really love and you've really fallen in love with his physical abilities and his talents. And that's why once you have that one guy set in your mind, now you can come up with a price tag that it takes to come off that one guy. If you had three receivers, if they really do have three receivers all on the same tier.
I'd be surprised, too.
I'm just saying,
yeah.
If they did right there, you can be really not as definitive as to what it is you want to move out of there.
But, you know, you're right. But, it,
but if you have a, if you have a, if you got one guy in mind, with that number four pick that you absolutely love, now the price continues to rise.
Couldn't you have them all in the same tier? Like, let's just, I'm going to put the names in my order. It's probably not Monty's order. But, what if you had them all in the first tier, but you like Marvin Harrison Jr. more, and then you like Odunze and you like Neighbors? So, like, if trades weren't a thing.
That's what I like. I like Marvin Harrison Jr. You know that.
Yes.
Danger Zone. Rome Odunze. And then Malik Nance.
I'm expecting you to come in here in a flight suit on Thursday.
Even though Marvin Harrison Jr., he broke my heart. He did. When he was, I'm not going to run. I'm not going to do it. I don't have to do it.
He can make up for it, though.
It broke my right. I'm not going to come off.
Isn't there an episode of Seinfeld where he just keeps saying, I choose not to run, because he was supposed to race some guy? Yeah, that's Marvin Harrison Jr.
I choose not to run. That one.
I tried to make a Seinfeld reference for you, and you didn't get it.
No, but I wasn't a big Seinfeld guy, sorry.
Oh, whatever. Let's say there's a top tier, and let's say you go Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, Malik Neighbors, but they're all in that top tier.
Yeah.
So then if trades weren't allowed, you know you would take Marvin Harrison Jr. But if somebody comes along with a ridiculous offer, you don't necessarily, like, you like MHJ better than Rome Odunze, but you don't think it's a huge drop-off. It might be worth three first-round picks.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Odunze and three first-round picks or Marvin Harrison Jr.? That's where I think it gets tough.
Yeah. Well, right now, I think you'd be slapping Monty Austinfort and the Arizona Cardinals in the face if you weren't ready to deal three number ones.
I guess one of them would be used on a dude's end.
Honestly, I think right now you would be slapping Monty in the face. What are you talking about? You want to come up to number four? Hey, his name is Trey Lance. It's in the books, and that's what it's going
to
take.
Well, he doesn't even have to take your call at this point.
I know, and this is the thing that is great for Monty Austinfort. Again, why would you ever make a deal now when you know you're not going to get the team's best offer right now? I mean, you're just not.
But you have to go into draft night then. I mean, you only have, what, 10, 15 minutes? Why do they keep changing it? I think it's 10 minutes
yeah,
now, right?
Right. So in the first round, it's 15.
15, okay. So you've got 15 minutes. That's it. So you can't be like, well, the Giants are calling. Ah, now Minnesota's calling. Well, hell, the Giants heard Minnesota's calling, so they're calling. Okay, now Denver's calling. Here's Sean Payton. He wants to talk about random Sean Payton things for 5 minutes. You don't have the time for that. Because, I mean, I guess your fallback is, hey, there's a minute left on the clock. Just go up there and take Marvin Harrison Jr. But you got to have a very specific plan for all scenarios.
Sure.
Like, Chicago knows they're going to go up there and draft Caleb Williams. It's starting to sound like Washington's going to take J.J. McCarthy, if you believe on how rapidly the betting odds have fallen.
It's 10 minutes. You're right.
Okay, so 10 minutes.
Yes.
So now it's even tighter. You got 10 minutes to do this. So you can't go up there and be like, well, let's see who calls. You got to be like, hey, here's... Denver can have line one, Minnesota can have line two, the Giants can have line three, and we're not taking any calls once we get through about 6 or 7 minutes.
Yes.
Because you can't be on the phone with somebody and have to make a snap decision after all this.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, if you want to go ahead and make an offer, you better call early. You better be on the phone with Monty when the Cardinals are on the clock, because you're not going to sit there and just, okay, I'm only going to take one call. No, you know what? What's your best offer? You got 30 seconds. Give it to me now.
Yeah.
Because I've got another call that is coming in, right? I mean, can you imagine?
It's like the scene from Moneyball, and somebody needs to refilm it and call it Moneyball. Like the Cardinals need to do this, because you'd have to have Monty in the video for it to work.
Monty on the move.
Moneyball. Monty on the move. Text us your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. We come back. Where was game one lost for the Phoenix Suns? We've got options, and we'll go through them next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Everybody, Dan Bickley here, and tomorrow we'll get you prepped for Game 2 of the Suns-Timberwolves. Don't miss a minute. We kick it off at 6 a.m. on Arizona Sports.
All right, welcome back to the show. The Phoenix Suns not back at it today. They won't play until tomorrow. Boy, we all did great on Kevin or Devin. Cowards, we all picked the same player.
Yeah.
And we were wrong.
Well,
yeah.
Wrong.
Wrong.
Big time.
Devin Booker, 18 points. I don't remember any of the 18. All right, so down 0-1 in the series. I was looking at this during the break, just kind of running through times where the Suns have been down. I'm just looking at the recent era since they started getting back into the playoffs. I'm not going back to, like, the Kevin Johnson days. I'm just looking from the run to the NBA Finals in 21, and then the year when they lost to Dallas, and then last year. A lot of these series, they hadn't trailed in. Like, the year they went to the NBA Finals, they never trailed against Denver. They never trailed in the series against the Clippers. But once they fell behind to Milwaukee, they ended up losing the series. They lost four in a row. They did, though, also trail the Lakers, if you recall, in the first round, 2-1, and they did come back and win that. Now, it's a couple years ago. It's a much different team. It's kind of been a mixed bag when they've fallen behind in the series. The only reason I was even looking at that, Wolf, is because there have been times this season where they respond really well.
Yeah.
But there's been times this season, and I can't get, you know, a couple of the last year, the way the playoffs ended, or certainly the year before, even though it's a lot of different players, where they took a punch and they just went right down. Like, it wasn't a TKO, it was just a knockout.
Yeah, for me, Luke, it's just... Devin Booker is he's the one guy, right? I mean, he's the one constant right now. I know KD for half the year as well. Before that, Frank Vogel, this is his first go at it. You know, I'm just saying right now, everything has changed so much.
That's true.
That it's very difficult for me to look at that and start connecting dots. I'm not saying you're wrong. That's your opinion right there.
I think what you're saying is right in the sense of, the team is so different. Even the coach is different.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything is different.
But I think as a fan of this team, you're probably a little... I'm still shell-shocked after what happened against Dallas a couple years ago. And then certainly against Denver last year when they started to face adversity in the playoffs, it was just like, all right, we'll see you. You know, we got next year. I don't think it's happening after one game in the first round against Minnesota. They've been really good against the Timberwolves this season. But I do think this is a big game on Tuesday, because I don't know that I think I'd still pick them to win the series right now.
Yeah.
If they go down 2-0, I don't know how I could feel that way.
Yeah, I know. It'd be very, very tough to actually do that right now. But, you know, it was getting back to Devin Booker, I just want to say this right now. I knew this was going to be a physical series. I think we all felt like it was going to be an uptick in physicality, of course, especially since the playoffs are here, and we all know how it goes in the postseason. But for me right now, I thought Book would be the guy that would flourish in a very physical game. And that did not happen in game one. And that was really perplexing to me to see that actually unfold.
Is that where you think this game was lost? Are you going with Booker? Because there's quite a few candidates. I can throw some out if you want. I mean, Devin Booker not looking like Devin Booker would be right at the top of the list.
And that's where I would go on that.
Getting out-rebounded 52-28 not great either.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Getting dominated in the paint. Yeah.
Dominated. The physicality, once again, if you ask me what is the main thing, my main takeaway, it was the physicality collectively overall. But if you're asking me where was this game lost, if I would have told you Devin Booker was going to attempt his first free throw with a minute 28 to go in the third quarter, what would you have thought? I mean, in a very physical game like this, Book, it almost went three quarters without attempting a free throw.
Yeah.
No. Now, Book is the guy who's going to put it on the floor, take it to the rack. He's going to draw some fouls, of course. That's going to happen. And yet I'm sitting here thinking, man, he was 3-12 from the field after three quarters. 3-12 from the field after three quarters and did not attempt that free throw until a minute 28 in the third quarter.
There were a lot of weird stats in this game. You had Booker had two field goals in the first quarter and then one more before the end of the third quarter. So he had hit three field goals by the end of the third quarter, five for the whole game. You had Grayson Allen miss every shot. You had Eric Gordon miss every shot.
Man.
You had Yusuf Nurkic make one shot in the second half. Obviously, you're never going to win doing that. It really doesn't matter. Like that ended up, as the game wore on, looking more like the team that lost to the Spurs without Victor Wembanyama. And I heard the morning show bring this up too, and I think everybody would agree, that was about Minnesota's best game. Like, Minnesota could not have asked for a better across-the-board performance, and they got it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. A lot of people also looked at Devin Booker, based on innings, and said, you know what, three fouls. Three fouls, and he had three fouls in the first half, and that was not ideal, of course, for the Phoenix Suns. But Anthony Edwards and Mike Conley, they also had three fouls each.
Yeah.
Each one of those guys. So, you know, it wasn't a situation where it was just the Suns that were hurting from that. So, you know, once again, listen, overall, the T-Wolves were much more physical than the Phoenix Suns over the course of four quarters. Again, I thought the Suns came out ready to go.
The first quarter looked like, and I think this is, I've been trying to figure out how to verbalize this all season. The first quarter felt like a, okay, here we go. It's going to be a back and forth. Minnesota's going to do this. The Suns are going to do this. Minnesota. And then the rest of the game, it was just Minnesota doing stuff. And that's sort of, it's sort of the way this season has felt, hasn't it? Like, I went and watched the game with a couple friends at a sports bar in town, and it was packed. And I think three other people were watching the Suns. Like, nobody was paying attention to the game as it was on.
Wow.
The audio was barely on.
Okay.
And it was on every TV, but it just, it was almost symbolic of this season. Like, it didn't even feel like the playoffs had started yet watching the game. It was a very strange experience. But at the same time, that's kind of the way it's been all season. We're like, normally the Suns are starting the playoffs. You don't hear anything else out of anybody's mouth when they're talking about sports. There's a little bit of a reference to the NFL draft because it's at the same time, right?
Yeah,
that's about
right.
It. And it's just kind of been like, yeah, I'm not emotionally invested yet. I got to see them go on a run before I can buy it. It's never that way with the Suns.
Yeah, it's never that way with the Suns. And yet, honestly, right now, as I watch this team, this is going to be their biggest challenge. It's going to be developing that kind of ferocity, that kind of intensity, that tenacity, and applying it to all four quarters. Because once again, this is just my impression of the game and what we saw. It was a battle in that first quarter. And then through attrition, over time, slowly, the physicality of the T-Wolves took control of the game. And there's no denying it. Will that happen again? This is why you can't just push a button. You can't just push a button. You can't do it. It's got to be go all the time. And that's my problem.
All right. To embrace the Suns playoffs and go all in with Arizona Sports, tune in daily at 8 a.m., noon, and 3 p.m. to snag our exclusive Phoenix Suns code word. Text it to 620-620 for your shot at scoring Suns playoff tickets. Don't miss your chance. Tune in today during the 8 o'clock, noon, and 3 o'clock hours. You've missed the 8 o'clock, but tune in during the noon and 3 o'clock hours. When we come back, not really a great weekend for the Diamondbacks either. I think we're going to talk to the right person next, Wolf. We need some optimism, so we're calling Jody Jackson. She'll hopefully be able to give us the latest on Merrill Kelly.
Jody.
Slate Ciccone, that was a bright spot. That's all next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Leading off with Jody Jackson on the Wolf and Luke Show.
Gurriel swings, lifts one high, hits one deep. This one is long gone to left field.
Brought to you by YRefi. Invest in America's future. Go to investyrefi.com.
All right, this is the right person to talk to right now. Diamondbacks 11-12. That's not terrible. Dealing with a lot of injuries, though, that is. So we're going to talk to Jody Jackson. It's time for some leading off. Of course, D-backs broadcaster joining us right now on the Arizona Sports Line. Jody, how's it going?
Going great, guys. What if I had a bad day? What if I was in a bad mood?
No.
You know?
Nope.
What if I wasn't your ray of sunshine?
Jody, can I tell you right now, that
we wouldn't
would
know
shock
what to do.
Me.
Yeah.
No, I mean, seriously.
That would throw off my whole week.
Yeah, Jody in a bad
well,
mood.
Well, good thing
I
is,
see that.
I mean, good thing is I'm fine. I'm doing good, guys. And yeah, things started off rough in the morning yesterday, but it turned out to be a win that felt kind of uplifting. So there's that, which is good.
Yeah, let's start with the good part of that. Let's start with the good news. How about Slade Ciccone just kind of getting called in on short notice? And I mean, he was throwing a no-hitter for a while there. He looked good.
Yeah, he really did. And what's interesting was that apparently they were deciding kind of, were they going to let him start or were they going to use him kind of as the bulk inning guy, kind of go with an opener. And Torrey decided to let him go out there and he got his first major league win. And so there was a little celebration, I think, maybe before we entered the clubhouse. But so what ended up being, and look, there's no sugarcoating it. It is very tough to see Merrill go out, and we don't know how long, and we can get into that in a moment. But Slade came in and really did the job, really took that opportunity. I think learned some things last year from the starts that he did have, from some of the bulk work that he had last year as well. And he was mixing it up. He was using the slider. Throws a little harder slider this year. Yeah, really only encountered an infield hit and then the homer. Two runs over six innings. They, you know, let him go six, which was great to see. And, you know, when you get six innings from your starter, it makes it that much easier for the bullpen. And then Gabriel Moreno had his fingerprints all over this one. And when you get six, the bullpen, you know, they came through, like I mentioned. But the other thing is, you know, even everybody contributed. Kevin Newman had a big insurance RBI. I mean, it just felt like everybody kind of stepped up to the plate to end that series on a good note.
So, Jody, what can you tell us about Merrill Kelly?
Well, I talked to Merrill, you know, we saw him in regular clothes yesterday, kind of, you know, which is not uncommon for the starting pitcher. You're kind of like, okay. But I knew something was up. Because I saw Slade and then talked to Merrill a little bit, talked to Torrey, and then Merrill said it was a mild teres major strain, which is kind of a, you know, funny Bob described it on the broadcast, but it's basically shoulder. There's some ramifications maybe into the back area. You know, he said when he felt it, it was a light sensation, which I guess that makes it sound a little better than what you would think when a guy's injured. However, look, they're going to go back. He went back last night. He's going to meet with doctors today, it sounds like, maybe even redo the imaging. Not sure they're going to read it, look at it. And, you know, obviously, you know, he'll see how he feels as well. But it's just hard to imagine that he wouldn't go on the IL. I mean, that's just me speculating because anytime that you feel something in the shoulder, you want to be careful with that. So that's what we know so far. You know, I'm trying to tell myself, I'm just like everybody else, right? You know, everybody knows how much the D-backs rely on Merrill. And he did miss about a month last year with a blood clot issue. That kind of felt like, even though that sounds so much more serious, that's blood thinners and then you come back, right?
Yeah.
With the shoulder, it feels a little uncertain, but hopefully it's nothing too serious. Hopefully it is, you know, and he told me it is his first muscular issue. You know, he's had other things before, but, you know, we just don't know yet. And you just hope for the best right now that it's only going to be a couple of weeks or a month or something like that. I mean, it could be a massive surprise and he comes right back. I don't want to speculate on the time, but, you know, they're going to miss Merrill Kelly.
Yeah. You know what, Jody? Could you text me the name of that injury once again? Just go ahead and do that.
Teres major. I've heard it with different people. You know, Verlander had it. Kershaw's dealt with, you know, when you say Kershaw, that rings a bell, though, because it's like red alert because he's had some longer issues with different things. But, you know, it's not uncommon. It is something you hear with pitchers. I think for him, it's just going to be when we learn more on how severe it is.
I think I'd feel better if it just had a different name. If you say mild, but then it's teres major. Like, it just seems right. Like it's a mild major strain.
I do know how to spell it. I assume it's the Latin, T-E-R-E-S.
It's the Latin.
Now you're speaking Wolf's
language. It's always
the
Latin, Jody.
Yeah, I took Latin in high school. You know, comes in handy once in a while.
The dead language. What a beautiful thing to take.
Jody Jackson's joining us, and now you have to do the rest of the interview in Latin, obviously, because you've set the bar there. Jordan Montgomery, we haven't got to talk about him yet. He pitched on Friday. He looked good. It helps when your team scores 17 runs for you, but still, that's maybe a bright spot with this team that's had just an absurd amount of injuries. But Jordan Montgomery, early returns looking pretty good, Jody.
Yeah, it really was. I actually, you know, wasn't expecting even that out of the gate. You know, some of the guys that talk about the abbreviated spring or not having a spring and having to work on your own. But he had two AAA outings, which Blake Snell, you know, didn't have. Blake Snell is just a different type of pitcher, too. And Jordan Montgomery went out there, and he was totally in control. And, yeah, he did have great run support, but everything looked good, you know, and I'm sure he, you know, is just going to improve as time goes on. But you have to love what he was able to give you. And it gave the whole team a boost. Everybody talked about how it was like a shot in the arm, just getting him in there to kind of feel like he was settling everything down, and especially with this latest news with Merrill. So, you know, as guys are on that injury list, you see the importance of, you know, Ken Kendrick, Derek Hall, and the organization making the decision to bring in Jordan Montgomery. And Mike Hazen, of course, you know, this was huge. You know, in hindsight, you'll never know, okay, Eduardo Rodriguez was going to have a setback and Merrill might have an issue. But it's really big, and he'll pitch in this series here in St. Louis, and hopefully we just see more of the same.
You know, I'm not worried about Corbin Carroll, but I will bring him up to you, Jody, right now. 3-17 in this series, no RBIs, no stolen bases. He did make some great plays, of course, in the outfield. But he pretty much had a pedestrian series against the Giants, for him at least. What do you think is possibly going on, and when do you expect Corbin to break out?
Well, if you're not worried, you're, I think, in the minority, Wolf, because a lot of people seem to be worried out there. Torrey Lovello's with you. He says he's not. But I think it's only natural when you don't see him driving the ball on a more consistent basis. Mm-hmm. But for me, the word survival comes along for Corbin, because he is taking some walks. He is getting on via the infield hit at times. I think that he is kind of surviving in there. And he got on base yesterday via the walk a couple times, and he can make things happen. He did play great defense. So it's not they'll give him a day off here or there. As far as dropping him in the lineup, Torrey Lovello said he was considering it. We almost wondered if that would happen yesterday. But, and I don't know if it was because there was a right-hander out there or whatever that reason was. But if he continues to struggle, I would think maybe Torrey would consider that more. But as far as putting him out there, he is still a huge weapon, asset, all of those things for this team. And, you know, he does look, I think it's very mental right now. When I watch him swinging at, you know, he swung at a pitch, a couple of them over the weekend. One was really high and outside. And I think it's just really mental right now. And hopefully he can get right soon. And I know it's going to be, he's coming up on the Seattle series, and that'll be a lot of hopefully fun for him. Hopefully he can enjoy it. Love to see him start to heat up a little bit here in St. Louis, but there is a little concern when the guy that was driving the ball so much last year is just not doing that.
Jody, great stuff as always.
Thank you, Jody.
I think you made us feel a little bit better, so thank you.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Right.
Glad I could help, guys. Right. Have a great Monday.
Thank you, Jody. You too. See, that right there, Jody Jackson's the only person that would ever tell you to have a great Monday.
Yeah.
And mean it. I was going to ask her about Blaze Alexander, too, but we ran out of time because he left the game with an injury, too. And he's been one of the few bright spots, although it doesn't sound like that one. That sounds like that was just hamstring cramps, which on this team this year is good news. It's only hamstring cramps.
Yeah.
And we come back. Devin Booker did indeed struggle in game one. What does that mean for game two? It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Leading off with Jody Jackson on the Wolf and Luke Show. Brought to you by YRefi. Invest in America's future. Go to investyrefi.com. Your home for everything Diamondbacks. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.